Kaji Maitamei Oladapash, Aingwa Maasailan, Naisafiri Orik Steve. That's in my Maasai language. My name is Maitamei Oladapash. I'm from Maasailan in Kenya, and I travel with Rick Steve. Kaji Maitamei Oladapash, Aingwa Maasailan, Naisafiri Orik Steve.
As a child, he drew animals at the zoo. Today, he portrays those same animals in their natural habitat in Africa on what he calls an artist's safari. Fred Krakowiak first joined us on Travel with Rick Steves 5 years ago. He's back from his home base in Phoenix to tell us more about what the African bush country has been saying to him. His latest book of animal portraits and painting techniques is called The Artist's Safari, Capturing Africa with Pen, Lens, and Paintbrush. Fred, thanks for joining us.
It's a pleasure to be here. Thank you, Rick.
You know, Fred, you open your book with this amazing story of the birth of a giraffe. Describe that experience to us.
Well, the birth of the giraffe came after a unique event. We had been traveling, and early in the morning, the forest went very quiet, and we were not sure exactly what had happened. And so we started tracking to where we heard a bunch of lions, and they were chasing down a giraffe, a male giraffe. And if you can imagine three lionesses taking down a male giraffe, it was something to see. As they take this giraffe down, the lionesses separated, and two large males came from the back. One was black tuft behind its ears, and the other one was a little bit larger, had a golden mane with a red tint. Well, these two males came upon the scene, and what had happened then was they stood up and fought over the first bite of meat, the prime choice of the giraffe. The larger of the two males stayed where he was, and the smaller male moved to the rear. What happened next was very unique, as all of this commotion caused a series of events, and we had a circle of life, so to speak, as the lionesses stood guard around because they were going to eat next. The next circle was the hyenas and the black-backed jackals. And then in the trees, the vultures had also started to perch and come. And over the next 4 days, we watched everyone take their turns at this giraffe until after the fourth day, there were only four ribs showing. Of course, it was a part of life, part of nature. And as we were leaving that site on the fourth day, we saw another giraffe, and it was a mother giving birth to a giraffe. And you could see this giraffe drop 6 feet, and then no less than minutes went by, and it stood up on its wobbly legs. And it was just a pleasure to see the circle of life. Something has to pass away in nature, and then something is born later.
You talked about how the lionesses would take down a giraffe. It's almost like it's not tragic, it's just part of the circle, isn't it?
Absolutely, it's just part of the circle.
You're a painter, and I would imagine it's a challenge for you to get a front row seat on all this action. And it must be interesting for you to look at other tourists that come and go on safaris who really miss the boat as far as observing. As a painter and as an enthusiast for the wonder of natural life in Africa, how do we observe better, and how do we understand what you're seeing as you clearly do?
I encourage everyone that I take to Africa or everyone I talk to about Africa, I encourage them to put the camera down and to use more of their senses, to use their senses of smell. Smell what's about you. As an example, the wild dogs, the stench of the wild dogs is 10 times worse than that of a skunk. And yet people want to just pick up their camera and take pictures instead of using their sense of smell or their sense of hearing. If you're tracking down lions and you lose track of lions, use your sense of hearing. I tell a story in the book about tracking lions. I thought the lions, all their tracks went to the west. And I had thought that we would be going west. And Humphrey, of course, goes in the opposite direction.
Humphrey being your guide, your African guide.
Yes, my African guide. After we had tracked them and fortunately was able to find them, I asked Humphrey, why did you go to the opposite direction of what all of my knowledge thought we should go? And he said, Fred, you didn't use your sense of hearing. And I said, I did. I heard the elephants and I heard the elands. I didn't hear anything. He goes, no, you did not listen good enough because you needed to listen to the baboons, the juvenile baboons. The first call the juvenile baboon learns is the lion alarm. And they were screaming a lion alarm in the opposite direction. And so I knew they had backtracked. So again, you want to use all of your senses, your sense of smell, your sense of sight. Put the camera down and be a part of Africa.
You begin your book with a quote from Paul Gauguin. It says, I shut my eyes to see. What does that quote mean to you?
Well, it means, quite frankly, just as it says, you want to shut your eyes and use your other senses to listen to the language the animal kingdom uses to speak, the messages they communicate about the magnificence and frailty of life. In Africa, nature is actually distilled to its essence.
Is that part of the magic that keeps you going back to Africa every year? You're an artist. You could do your work in other parts of the planet. What is it about Africa?
Africa, specifically, it's the close encounters with the amazing creatures of Africa that allow me to look into their eyes and deep into their souls and then capture their spirits with my pen, my photographs, my paintbrush. And this reveals the inner circle, the magic of Africa. And the people of Africa, too, they are treasured symbols of their tribe.
Now, when you say look into the eyes and look into the souls of the animals, is that literal? Are you looking into their eyes and seeing something?
Yes. I'm interpreting the animals through their posture, through their body language, and their expressions indicated by the shape of their eyes or the position of their ears. I'm reading their body language. And even at night, you should be able to recognize predators by the way they sway their heads, their eye positions, the distance between their eyes. How far off the ground are their eyes? Is the sway of their head perpendicular? Is it like a protractor? Is it up and down? Africa is alive 24/7, so whether it be during the day, interpreting their body language and gazing into their eyes to see what they're feeling, facial expressions seldom lie.
Wildlife artist Fred Krakowiak's our guest right now on Travel with Rick Steves. Samples of his work are online at maverickbrushstrokes.com. And his latest book is called The Artist Safari, Capturing Africa with Pen, Lens, and Paintbrush. You can also listen to Fred's 2008 interview in the Travel with Rick Steves archives. Look on our website for Program 139.
Fred, listening to you talk, I would imagine that your guide Humphrey, who apparently you is a favorite of yours that you use year after year, would consider you a good student.
Well, he tests me, and he tests me quite often, and I like to be tested. I like to learn. I want to enhance and increase my knowledge of Africa for several reasons, and one of them is for the conservation of Africa, the wildlife. Unfortunately, on this last trip, we found a rhino that had been poached not days before. It was very, very sad. So I try to learn everything I can about Africa as far as tracking, how to conserve wildlife, etc.
Talk a little bit about tracking, Fred. I read in your book you've got points of what makes an effective animal tracker, and it's much more than just looking at the tracks. You even analyze the urine that you would find in the dust.
Yes, you are tracking an animal through the space that it occupies as its home. You're just not following hoof or paw prints. You're looking for a scrape on a tree, a broken branch, flowers that are out of sequence. Tracking into the sun often will have prints light up like a runway. That's always to your advantage to track into the sun.
You even said spider webs matter. How would a spider web tell you something about an animal you're tracking?
Spider webs do matter. If you're looking and that spider web is broken in any way, then you know that an animal went through that direction, similar to spider webs that are between two flowers, as an example, two stems. If that spider web's been broken, then you know, even if the stem's not broken, if the spider web is busted, then you know that an animal's walked through there, and that gives you an advantage.
I noticed in one of the photographs in your book, Fred, your guide had a pistol in his holster and there was duct tape over the trigger. What are the safety concerns and why the duct tape?
Humphrey uses duct tape to make sure that there's no misfire on that gun. If he needs to pull it, he can easily pull the duct tape off, but he is always, primary concern is safety. He's had a 100% safety record since he began guiding 14 years ago. And he always carries a rifle with him when we go tracking on foot, which is what we do primarily. And so you always must trust your guide and listen to him. And I always emphasize that to anyone who goes with us.
You trust your life to your guide.
Your guide has to make good decisions. If you're being charged by an elephant, or as we were this past safari, charged by a female lioness, you have to read its body language and you have to trust the guide that you're with to know exactly what you need to do and to give you the proper instructions.
Because when you trust your guide, I would imagine you can get out of your, what might be your comfort zone, and get up really close and personal with the animals, which is your goal, I would imagine.
As my wife says, I am an adrenaline junkie, but I do like getting close to the animals and not put myself in harm's way, but again, to have an exciting moment in Africa, and Humphrey allows me to do that.
You know, your ability to get close with Humphrey's help really comes across in your art. I got to say, in your book, The Artist Safari, the paintings that you make, there's something almost super realistic about the paintings that gets you there, and you couldn't possibly have made that painting without being right there and hearing the landing of that baby giraffe when it's born, or feeling the thunder in the ground as the elephant's foot hits the ground near you. Talk about being up really close to an elephant.
When elephants are charging, and they are perhaps 30 feet away, an elephant sprinting runs at about 30 miles an hour, so you have 3 seconds, 4 seconds tops, to make a decision on whether or not that's a mock charge or if it's not a mock charge. As an elephant is approaching, if his ears are coming out and they are not pinned back, that's a good sign. That means it's going to be a mock charge. If his head is tilted up and looking directly at you instead of being down, tilted at a 45-degree angle down, that's also a good sign. You want his eyes looking up at you, not down. And you want his trunk, if it's hanging to the ground, you don't want it coiled underneath his chest because, again, that's more aggressive.
What's the purpose of a mock charge? I would imagine that's just posturing.
It's posturing for the elephant to tell you that he's allowing you to be a visitor to his country.
Well, that would be reassuring. So you can continue your work as a photographer or a painter, knowing he's not going to be aggressive with you.
Absolutely. And so as they approach, it's very important to immediately read their body language. And then as they do approach, again, you want to use all of your senses. I quite often have put a camera down so that I can experience the charge as he's kicking the dust up and looking at that foot and looking at those nails as they're hitting the ground and the dust is being thundered up into the air and pellets are bouncing off of my forehead.
Man,
and just
man.
Being able to smell the musk.
Listening to you talk about this, I want to go there, but I want Humphrey with me.
I would, at this point, never go back to Africa on a walking safari without Humphrey. I have been with other guides, but Humphrey's one of the best.
I'm Rick Steves. This is Travel with Rick Steves. We're speaking with Fred Krakowiak, and Fred's new book is The Artist's Safari. In your writing, I like your book because it's a combination of photographs that give you a sense of place, this vivid writing that gives you behind the scene, and that's exactly what's going on that you've gleaned from your experience and the help of your guide, and your vibrant paintings of these scenes. You clearly have a respect for nature and a concern about, you know, the well-being of these species. And you write that extinction is forever. What's the big news with endangered species? From your book, I learned that there used to be about 500,000 lions just one generation ago, and now it's down to 20,000. Cheetahs have dropped from 100,000 a century ago to just 10,000 today. Are we in danger of losing some of these majestic beasts?
We are. Wild dogs is down to 3,000, or some estimates have it as high as 3,500, although that's probably a bit embellished. The problem we have is not only do we have human encroachment, but we also have things going on in Africa where money talks. And unfortunately, right now in Zimbabwe, there's a company that wants to employ their mineral rights and dig along the Rukamachi River, which is just outside a World Heritage Site of monopoles. So if they did that, that would just create havoc with the whole ecosystem of monopoles.
Mm. Short-term profit for long-term disaster. You call elephants ivory carriers. Are they still poached for their ivory?
Yes, unfortunately they are. They are still poached very heavily in the Congo for ivory. Countries like South Africa have tried to eliminate it. And unfortunately, because of that, the genes that should be passed on so that these ivory carriers can continue to have these massive tusks, many of the elephants now that you see are tuskless, and they've, through genetics, if they have big tusks, then, you know, that doesn't bode well for their livelihood, and the tusks are smaller.
So elephants are evolving to have smaller tusks because they're less prized by poachers?
Yes, absolutely.
Isn't that something? Also, Fred, you talk about how we often fear predators, you know, the fast cats with big teeth, but how they're often misunderstood and not appreciated.
Well, they are very misunderstood. And the lions, as an example, they, as I mentioned earlier, tracking a lion, you're in their house. This wildlife, whether it be lions or cheetahs or leopards, you know, we are invading where they have been for centuries. And so we have to be more conscientious of that fact. And they are not there to really harm anyone. I was surrounded by 18 lions this past safari. And the reason for that was simply that there was four cubs in a little channel that we had come upon and didn't see. And so we actually had to just wait until everybody calmed down, and then we were able to just back out and then walk away. So they weren't there to harm us. They were certainly there to put us on alert that they were not happy with us being there. Mm-hmm. So it's just a matter of being conscientious with mm-hmm. your surroundings and being aware of your environment when you're there.
Fred Krakowiak, the book Artist Safari, it's a great journal. It's an intimate journal of your love of Africa and the natural majesty of Africa. You write, "We cannot love what we do not understand." How does that impact your work? Why do you write that?
Well, that's one reason I went to Africa. 20 years ago, when I was painting from zoo animals and doing the art from the wildlife at zoos, someone had told me, "Fred, you're missing their soul, you're missing their heart." And once I went to Africa, my art improved 200%, because that's when you're out there walking amongst Africa and amongst the wildlife and looking at them in their eyes and looking at their souls, that's when you really appreciate the wildlife that's there.
Fred Krakowiak, thank you so much for the inspiration, and congratulations on your beautiful book, The Artist Safari.
Oh, thank you, Rick. I appreciate it. Hope we can talk again. Bye.
Francis Tapon's about to start a multi-year journey into every country in Africa. Up next, he tells us how and why. We're at 877-333-7425. Our email is radio@ricksteves.com.